Very good morning to everyone. Before we begin our session today, the court would like to welcome to the bench two visitors who are with us for today's session. We have with us today two judges from Japan who are presently studying at the University of Notre Dame as visiting scholars. We have, first of all, the Honorable Hiroshi Hono. Judge Hono is from the court in Tokyo, and will be returning to that court after spending a year in the United States, where he is traveling and observing the administration of justice in this country. And the very first for us here, we've had Japanese judges before, but we've never had a husband-wife team. We are also honored to have with us today the Honorable Akiko Hono. Judge Hono is graduate of the University of Tokyo and has served as a judge both in the criminal courts and in the family and juvenile delinquency division of the district court. She also will be returning to Japan and will be continuing as a judge. Judges, we are very pleased to have you with us today, and we hope that you enjoy the session and enjoy the arguments of the members of the bar. We'd like to begin then this morning. The first case is number on the call is number 02-1873, the estate of Darlene Allen against the city of Rockford. And the first advocate is Mr. Taylor.
Good morning, Your Honor. To each of Your Honors. My name is Christopher Taylor, and I represent the estate of Darlene Allen. I will be presenting argument this morning as to why the lower court's award of summary judgment to the city of Rockford and the police officers involved was error in my estimation. My first argument is that the lower court improperly presumed the appellant to be incompetent to make her own decisions regarding medical treatment. The law in Illinois, as it's been expressed by the case law, is that there is a presumption of competence in the absence of a determination of incompetence. I cited in my brief the case of In re Ostwick, which actually indicated that in addition to the attending physician, that case construed the law to require two physicians to sign off on a determination of that a patient is lacking competency. The case here involved one emergency room doctor asking the appellant to consent to diagnostic testing in the emergency room, and when she refused, after having been asked and tendering a refusal, that doctor then determined, on paper anyway, that the appellant lacked the capacity to refuse. Well, if she's lacking the capacity to refuse under Illinois law, she is competent, first of all, but he then forcibly extracted blood and urine from her in order to determine what, if anything, she had taken. She had been taken to the emergency room by a Rockford police officer who had arrested her for driving under the influence of potentially drugs, I believe it was. She was taken there. She refused the testing for the purposes of the officer's request for testing, and at that time, the doctor made this determination. And I say on paper this was a determination that she lacked capacity because the officer testified by way of an affidavit that was presented in the trial court. The officer indicated that after the appellant refused the diagnostic testing that the physician was seeking, the physician told the officer that it was too much of a liability for them to allow Darlene Allen to leave the hospital without knowing what she was on, and so they were going to do the testing essentially for liability purposes.
How could they really let her even leave the hospital? She was totally incoherent.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think they needed to. I think one of the great tragedies of this case is that the question of whether she needed to leave the hospital is one that nobody ever examined. She's in police custody. She's brought to the hospital and has no choice about being in the hospital. If it wasn't for budgetary concerns or some other reason, they could have just kept her there and observed her until they were satisfied that there wasn't going to be any sort of a problem.
Wouldn't that have exposed everybody to a lawsuit for lack of treatment? It's just going to let her lie there and get worse and worse?
Well, the doctor indicated that at the time that he did the forced testing, there was no immediate need to intervene, which would be the emergency exception under Illinois law. Lacking an immediate need to intervene, and in response to her explicit refusal of permission to touch her, they have no authority to do so. Under Illinois law, Grant versus Petroff, it is a battery to force treatment on somebody who doesn't want it.
Let me follow up on Judge Ripple's questions. Wouldn't the police officers have been liable if they prevented the hospital from treating her and she had later died?
No, I don't believe that they would be liable. She explicitly refused treatment, and the statute in Illinois, there is a statutory enactment that requires court intervention before you treat somebody who has not given consent unless you get surrogate consent, which was another thing that we suggested the doctor should have done.
What happens if somebody's bleeding to death in an accident? You got to get a surrogate's permission?
No, Your Honor. In that instance, I believe that the emergency exception would kick in and apply, because it would be a situation where there was an immediate need for medical intervention.
And you say there's affirmative testimony to the contrary here?
Yes, there is. The doctor indicated that there was no immediate need to intervene, and that was in the record at R25 statement number 15 at page 3. The doctor indicated there was no immediate need to intervene at the time that he chose to intervene. He could have waited, just kept her there under observation, and if there was no development of an immediate need to intervene, then her wishes should have been honored under the Illinois law that exists. That statute is very clear that if you don't have consent, you seek out a surrogate consenter. If you don't get surrogate consent, you go to the court for intervention, absent the emergency exception that exists under Illinois case law.
Did the police officers know there was no immediate need to intervene?
Yes, they did, because they didn't take her to the hospital for medical purposes initially. They took her there because...
Now, at the time the decision, medical decision was made in the hospital, did the police officers know?
Yes, they did, because the doctor told Officer Taylor that this was being done for liability purposes. It was too big of a liability to let her leave without knowing what she was on. There was never a statement to the police officer that there was an immediate need to intervene, which is what the Illinois law...
Was there ever a statement that there was no immediate need to the police officers?
I don't believe that there was ever a statement that there was no immediate need to intervene, although it is...
Any deposition testimony to that effect?
No, there is no deposition testimony to that effect, although it is clear from the testimony of Officer Taylor, she indicated that she was taken aside and told that this was being done because of the liability issue, and that she then told them, well, you know, I need to call my supervisor. If you're going to do this, it's on you, it's not on me. She knew that there was a problem with what they were doing here, and nobody elected to have that further discussion as to whether it was necessary or not.
Well, Dr. Prowse, didn't he want to make sure that he wasn't missing any potentially life-threatening conditions?
That is what Dr. Prowse chooses to say after the fact. However, first of all, if he wanted to be sure of that, the way that he can do that is to obtain surrogate consent, which he made no effort to do, consistent with the law in Illinois.
How long does it take to get surrogate consent?
Oh, I would imagine one phone call to the sister of the person who's there would have been sufficient. It's very easy. The statute in Illinois lays out who the appropriate people are for surrogate consent purposes, and they had in their possession at the time, they found in the vehicle a pill bottle with my client's sister's name on it. They had her name. It wouldn't have been very difficult, in my view, to at least look into surrogate consent.
Was there anything about her condition that was inconsistent with someone who had taken too many drugs, some kind of a drug overdose?
Well, that's I suppose, a judgment that I'm not competent to make because I'm not a physician. However, the fact of the matter is that the doctor himself indicates that even with her having taken some sort of an amount of drug that caused whatever symptoms she was presenting, he's indicated that there was no immediate need to intervene at the time that he chose to do so. And with that being the situation that existed, and with him communicating to the officer that this is being done because it's a liability issue if we let her leave without looking into what she's on, that statement, I'm not suggesting that if the officer didn't have that knowledge, we'd be in the same position that we're in. That statement to the officer that due to our liability concerns, we are not going to honor this individual's refusal of consent to touch her, amounts to a statement to that police officer that we are going to commit a battery on this individual as soon as you step out the door.
So then these police officers have to, not only the other long list of rights and law that they need to be familiar with, have to be familiar with the law of consent. Do you know if they're trained in this area?
I do not know if they're trained in this area, but I submit to the panel that Illinois has passed a statute. There is a clearly worded statutory enactment that the police officers should be familiar with. And if they're going to have a procedure where they take you to the hospital to request testing, she was not taken there for medical purposes. She was taken there because they wanted to take her there and then request that she submit to some testing. If they want to take her there prior to making that request for testing, then they should be familiar with what the law requires once that circumstance is created by them.
Is it your view that at the time this decision was made, the officers misapprehended the state of the health of your client, that they thought she was incompetent when she was competent, or is it your view that the officers knew she was competent?
It's my view that the officers knew that she was competent, although I don't believe that view is necessary to a resolution of the case because of the clearly worded statutory enactment that pretty much says it doesn't matter. That law says that if we presume that she is incompetent, then treatment is lawful if you resort to surrogate consent or if you go to court. That's when it's lawful. Otherwise, it's not. So the statute makes it easy for the police.
I think we have the point, sir. Thank you.
I see that
your time has expired, sir.
Thank you, Judge.
We'll hear now from Mr. Dorris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I represent the medical defendants, which would be the hospital, its employees, and Dr. Proust. And the issue which is most important to my clients is the issue of the law of medical consent in the state of Illinois. It's an issue I don't think that this court has to reach. I think that in deciding the propriety of the state actors, the police officers, and in determining whether a constitutional right was violated, you don't need to reach the state law issue. That's what we've argued in the first part of our brief. But since it is the most important issue to my clients, that's what I'm going to talk to you about today in the event that you do decide to reach it. This is a very difficult case. You might say a nightmare case for an emergency room physician, because what you have to do is make a decision on the spot about what to do with a patient whose competence, it's not clearly one way or the other. You've got to make a judgment whether the patient is competent to consent or refuse treatment. Then you've got to make that judgment about whether it is appropriate in this case to honor that decision. In fleshing out what happened at the hospital, I just wanted to respond to a couple of things that counsel said. One is that she was taken there for two reasons. One is for the police officer's reasons, but they also brought her there because she was injured in the accident. She was there for medical evaluation. The second point is that when the doctor said that, according to one person, that they couldn't let her go because of issues of liability, what that tells you is that's that doctor saying, this is my understanding of what we have to do, what is required of us. This isn't a statement of, well, because of some liability reason, we're going to do something that is now going to create liability for a battery. I think the plaintiff is reading far more into that comment, which was a second-hand one at best. And the other thing is that when the plaintiff refers you to Dr. Prouth's deposition testimony where he says there's no immediate need to intervene, I don't think that that comment is taken appropriately with the context of how it was said at the deposition. I would refer you to the plaintiff's site in their brief to where that supposedly came from. Dr. Prouth said he can't tell before he does the testing whether or not the patient is suffering from a lethal overdose. That's what he's saying, is he can't prospectively say before he tests the patient. But what he did say was the patient's demeanor, behavior, appearance, all indicated, in addition to the history of having this erratic behavior, 16 missing pills, she appeared to him to be under the influence, and he outlined the various things that can happen with the interaction of these drugs that can lead, I'll skip to the end, to death. And looking at that situation, that's when they decided to act. On the legal point of it, which neither the officers nor the... yes, you are?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were
going to
ask. On the legal point of it, the plaintiff's suggesting that there is some answer to be found in this statute, I think, was really diffused by one of your questions, Your Honor, when you asked about the bleeding patient. If a patient is lying there unconscious and bleeding, they're obviously not competent to consent. You obviously need to treat them. We want that doctor to treat that patient. We'd want it if it was us or our family members. If you look to the statute, there's no room for that. There's just no room for it because it says, well, you've got to document the incompetence, even though the person may be unconscious. And then you've got to go through this phone tree of different relatives to call. And if you don't find somebody, you don't act. And that's not the law. If you look in the state of Illinois, we're still instructing juries on the emergency exception. An Illinois appellate court just 2 years ago talked about the emergency exception, noted the existence of the Health Care Surrogate Act, and never presumed to say, as the plaintiff implies, that that has somehow preempted the law, the common law, on that point. What I believe that you can look at the statute as a safe harbor, as a provision that would allow protection for people who follow its provisions, but it's clearly aimed more at the deliberative situations of end-of-life decisions. For that reason, I think that on the state law issue, the plaintiff is incorrect.
Thank you, Mr. Daugherty. We'll hear now from Mr. Partridge, who is going to argue by telephone. Good morning, Mr. Partridge.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Jerry Partridge. I represent Sergeant Scott and Officer Taylor, the police officers and those men are like to thank you for the opportunity to argue by phone, and I hope everyone can hear me. Your Honor, the plaintiff states here that the trial court improperly resolved a factual dispute in favor of police officers. Qualified immunity is a legal issue, one which is bound up in a particular fact. When defendants raise the defense of qualified immunity, the court engages in a two-part objective inquiry. Not all factual disputes warrant the denial of summary judgment, only disputes that are material facts. There may be an issue here, Your Honor, of facts surrounding the plaintiff's competency, but it is not material for purposes of qualified immunity. What would a reasonable officer here have believed regarding the plaintiff's competency? Officer Taylor could not have reasonably or responsibly ignored Dr. Prouth's decision. Officer Taylor just arrested the plaintiff for DUI. The record is clear that she had no medical training beyond basic first aid, and there's no evidence in the record to suggest that Officer Taylor knew anything of the complexities of the legal issues surrounding whether an obviously drugged patient is competent to refuse medical testing. No reasonable officer could have questioned Dr. Prouth's expertise surrounding this issue. Evidently, the plaintiff here would prefer that police officers substitute their judgment for that of a highly trained or certified emergency room physician. I believe, Your Honor, that common sense here dictates otherwise. The trial court did not hear in examining this issue objectively from Officer Taylor's viewpoint. The plaintiff, Your Honor, did not suspend the constitutional right under Cheney versus Winnebago County Department of Social Services. I'm sure the court's familiar with the DeShaney case. In that case, the Supreme Court recognized that due process clause generally confers no affirmative right to governmental aid, even where such aid may be necessary to secure life, liberty, and property interests. The court went on to basically delineate two circumstances where there's an exception to that general rule. One is a custodial setting, and the other is where the state affirmatively places the person in a position of danger. Supreme Court cited incarceration and institutionalization as examples of the deprivation of liberty triggering substantive due process protection. Beyond those two cases, Your Honor, the court did not elaborate as to what situations that this would apply. I believe the plaintiff here cites Cruzan v. Director of Missouri Health Department and Washington v. Harper. Cruzan established that persons have a right to refuse medical treatment, and Washington essentially extended that right to a committed person. But neither of these cases address whether these rights apply in the case of a simple criminal arrest. The degree of control that a law enforcement officer has over an arrested person does not rise to this level. Sheen and his progeny united speaks to those persons involved in a simple criminal arrest. If, however, the court finds that the Sheen does apply here, the court must also find that the officers have cut off all avenues of aid without providing a reasonable alternative. The plaintiff's claim here certainly is novel, in that she alleges that the officers failed to protect her from potentially life-saving treatment, which she allegedly did not want. Defendants here have been unable to locate any case law that is analogous to the present one. The plaintiff asserts that the law of battery has been clearly established for centuries. However, the alleged battery here was not readily apparent to police officers lacking medical training and a fluid understanding of the law of consent to medical treatment. It's unreasonable to think that police officers faced with a potential life or death matter could be considered plainly incompetent or knowingly violative of the law. Officer Taylor did not place the plaintiff here in a position of danger. She was transported to Rockford Memorial Hospital. At the time she was arrested, she was driving under the influence of drugs, and Officer Taylor ignored her potentially saved the plaintiff's own life by preventing her from having another, perhaps fatal accident. Plaintiff makes the astounding contention that officers greatly increased the danger to her by taking her to her personal hospital. Officer Taylor's actions actually improved the plaintiff's relative safety. By allowing Dr. Krause to treat the plaintiff argues that Officer Taylor greatly increased the danger to her. Again, Your Honor, common sense belies this assertion. Plaintiff's argument is short-sighted and highly speculative at the plaintiff's level of safety and allegedly refusing medical treatment.
Mr. Partridge, your time has now expired.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, and we do hope that you feel better. Mr. Taylor, your time had expired, but if you have something you'd like to add, I'll give you an extra minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. In rebuttal, I would just like to point out that there was no emergency, and that I'm not suggesting that the emergency rule be written out. It's a rule of common sense. If somebody's bleeding to death, we can't take the time to wait and see what happens. However, when you have a physician saying there's no immediate need to intervene and you have a person saying my bodily integrity is not to be violated, you do not have my permission to touch me. If there's not an emergency that requires that immediate intervention, the law is clear in Illinois as to what is required. And a liberty interest can arise pursuant to the case of Felsey versus Fielder. It can arise pursuant to the state statute. I'm also not asking the police officers to second-guess the physicians in the case. The police officer knew that there was a problem and was told specifically that this individual was refusing. They should be held to what the law requires in Illinois. If the doctor says, well, this could have developed into, which is exactly what he said, if she left, it could have developed into something more serious, and we needed to know that. The solution is admit her for observation. She's in custody. She doesn't have a right to complain about where they're going to hold her. Then you can observe things, and if the emergency situation arises, you then override her desires because there's an emergency. If it doesn't arise, then you allow her desires to control.
Mr. Taylor, your time has now expired.
That is the solution. They missed it.
Thanks to all counsel. The case will be taken.